The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Carter Bird.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're all doing well as we are just a few days away from Christmas Day. So hope you're all doing well as we get near the end of December. The cold front is coming through, so be sure you're ready for that. Doesn't look like the weather's going to be as bad as they were saying it was going to be, so fingers crossed on that. But hopefully you're all doing well. If you're still at work this week, power through. You're almost there. If you happen to have a few days off, then congratulations. Enjoy that. We will be off all of next week, so keep that in mind. We have today, tomorrow.
First time we've been off on this show and since I've been here, so
yeah, for right? Like a long period of time. And we had Thanksgiving Day, right? And
yes,
we had Thanksgiving Day.
I think that's it.
That may be it. If we're forgetting something, we apologize. But yeah, we'll have all next week off, so looking forward to that. I know you're going to be heading back home up to Birmingham.
Yep.
I'll be doing some traveling of my own. I'll be in Birmingham for a few days, then going to Ohio for a few days, and then coming back here. So I get a week off, but it's going to be busy, but that's okay. It's always good to go and see some friends and family. So hopefully you have some great Christmas plans as well. We are just a few days away from that. So we have a show today, show tomorrow, and then we are all of next week. But again, happy Thursday. Hope you're all doing well. We've got a lot to go over today on the show. We've got Auburn basketball to talk about. We have a lot of recruiting stuff to talk about with Auburn football, recapping everything that happened yesterday for early signing day. We'll get into all of that here on the show today. And then at 3:30, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, he will join us on the phone lines talking all things signing day yesterday. We'll preview some of the bigger SEC bowl games, including the college football playoff games. We'll talk to him about those as, again, we will not talk to him between now and then. So we will get his thoughts on all of that. Again, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our usual Thursday guest. So that will be at 3:30. But until then, phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. That number again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn basketball from last night against Washington. We're going to get into that in just a second. Results and your reactions to signing day yesterday, where Auburn secured a top 20 recruiting class. If you wanted to give your thoughts on that as well, the class as a whole, specific guys, where Auburn is going. We'd love to hear your thoughts on any of that or anything else going on in the sports world. 334-321-1390. Carter, let's get into some Auburn basketball, huh? 84.
We haven't talked about it really all week because it's been so recruiting heavy.
Right. 84-61 on the road. They defeat Washington last night in what was a really, really solid performance for this Auburn basketball team, especially in the second half.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. I think it was the best game Auburn's played all year long. I was very encouraged by what I saw. I mean, you saw Wendell Green come to life there in the second half. You saw Jalen Williams and Jani Broome do what they need to do. That was the best game Jani Broome has played in an Auburn uniform thus far. And his next one, gonna be a challenge.
Yeah, it's gonna be a challenge.
Gonna be a challenge.
No doubt.
Because Colin Castleton. But I tell you what, I feel a heck of a lot better about Jani Broome after this West Coast trip than I did, say, a week ago. I mean, a week ago, we were coming off him playing Georgia State, and still, like, I was like, look, the stat line's okay, but he looked awful.
Questioning his size.
He looked like he wasn't physical. Now he's physical. And I appreciate that. Like, he's gone out and gotten 8 boards the last 2 games, I believe. He ran the floor so well in that game. At one point in the first half, he had 8 fast break points, I think, and 6 of them were off dunks. Mm-hmm. Like fast break dunks where he's getting up the court, guys are finding him in transition, he's getting easy looks at the rim. I mean, I was very encouraged by what I saw out of Jalen Williams, what I saw out of Jonai Broome, what I saw out of Chris Moore. Do you know what Chris Moore is shooting from three this year? Just take a guess.
I don't know.
Like, what would be a good...
Well, I know he hadn't shot a lot of threes as of a week ago, before they went on this West Coast trip. He had a pretty good percentage, but he hadn't shot a lot of them. So he's got to be shooting, like, 60% this year.
61%.
Wow, look at
that.
Look
at you.
Wow.
Look at you. Like,
I swear I didn't know that. So, yeah. But I believe it, because he takes... Like I said, he doesn't take a lot of threes, but he takes good quality shots.
Actually, scratch that, 61.5%.
Oh, okay. Got you. Well, still...
He takes a 1.1 three-pointers per game. But he's starting to shoot it more. He's starting to get more run out there on the court. He's starting to get more opportunities. And the confidence is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a three, as a wing for him, with the way he's built, he's physical enough to get a rebound down in the paint and go up through contact and get fouled or finish at the rim, get an and one. I'm really encouraged by what I've seen out of Jalen Williams, Jonai Broome, and Chris Moore. It really has been it has been encouraging to watch them grow over the last week.
Yeah.
The last week, we've seen kind of flashes here and there of Jalen Williams, of the greatness that he is. And I have always said, Jalen Williams is such an unassuming person. It's almost like he doesn't process how great he can be. It's like he doesn't, at times, believe in himself and his own abilities the way that they need to. That he needs to believe in himself, because when he just commits to being that dude, you see him go 6 of 10, you see him go 2 of 3 from three, you see him go 4 or 5 at the line, you see him get 8 boards. Like, he is the best player on the court, and Bruce said as much last night.
He's extremely talented, and you can see that he is becoming a huge focal point in this Auburn offense. You look at the point totals from last night. Jonai Broome and Jalen Williams both tied the team lead with 18. You had Chris Moore with 12, Wendell Green with 11, Zeb Jasper with just the 3 on a 3-pointer. Those are your 5 starters. You had Yoan Traore with 2, Dylan Cardwell with 6, Chance Westry with 2, Donaldson with 2, Berman with 3, Flanagan with 2, and KD Johnson with 5. So you get everybody a little scoring in there. A lot of people getting on the floor and getting some scoring. And I'm with you, man. I think between Jonai Broome and Jalen Williams, something that me and Jack on after the game Sunday evening that we just preached and praised on and just begged for 90 minutes was, get the ball into the high post and work from the inside out. It's something I've been talking about for weeks. It's something I know if Jack's listening, he's going to be excited that we're talking about it, because that is what Auburn benefited from.
That 2-3 zone so well last night.
And it works, and you can see how it works. You can use either Jonai Broome, Jalen Williams, you could use Chris Moore, you can use Dylan Cardwell if you really wanted to, and give the ball to the high post and let them turn around, face the basket, and then figure out somewhere to go. We saw Jonai Broome pull up and shoot floaters. We saw Jalen Williams pull up and shoot floaters. We saw both of them put it on the floor and take it to the basket. We saw both of them dish it out and get threes. And we saw those guys either take the three or keep moving the basketball. And that's one thing I saw from Auburn last night, too, was great ball movement, right? And what happens? When you move the basketball, the defense moves. And when the defense moves, it creates holes in scoring
Absolutely.
Lanes. And
Absolutely.
That's exactly what happened last night. And Auburn figured it out. And you see Jonai Broome and Jalen Williams both with 18 points.
So Trey Donaldson did not have the scoring night that he had.
Still played
USC.
A great game.
Have you seen how many assists he has?
That's 7.
As a bench player playing 18 minutes, he had 7 assists. He led the team.
Had a steal. Only had 1 turnover.
Also, I found it funny that as soon as I don't know the play-by-play guy's name, but PJ Carlesimo and Lesimo, I guess, but and the play-by-play guy, as soon as they said Wendell Green in the second half, he has 0 assists. It was like, it's almost like he heard it, and he just like he had like 3 in a row. And I thought he had 5 turnovers. I thought he had a rough first half. I thought his second half was really, really good. I thought it was a lot better. He's still not shooting the ball. Statistically, from 3, he's not shooting the ball worse than last year, but I don't know why it feels worse.
Well, I mean, he went 2 of 9 from the field and 1 of 5 from three last night.
But he got to the free throw line, which which the more he does that, with how well he shoots the free throw, that is key.
Right.
You know what I also find very interesting about this, the box score as I look at it right now? Of the main rotation, I'm not going to include Yoan in that right now because Yoan is still a baby giraffe trying to find his footing in college basketball. And at times, he looks a little bit lost, which he's getting better. He is. Not as sure as that we could say that about Chance right now. Chance only getting 1 minute, but Chance will have to come along, I'm assuming. He just needs confidence, which right now he does not have. KD Johnson,
yeah,
of the main rotation, played the second fewest minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He played 15 minutes, fewest of any of the guards, and only more than Yoan and Dylan Carwell. Of the rotation pieces.
If you want to talk about the guards and their
and
minutes.
And Lior.
Right, yeah. Well, talking about the main guards, right? Wendell Green, Zeb Jasper, Trey Donaldson, and KD Johnson. I think those are the four guards that play. I'm going to be honest. I'm okay with KD Johnson getting the least amount of minutes out of those guys.
You know what? I mean, I thought he, in a more limited role, I thought he played better, which I know that he had a brutal game against USC, mm-hmm. and Bruce was not happy with him. And he obviously sat out the Georgia State game for coach's decision or whatever. So it hasn't been a great week for KD Johnson. But he didn't force up a bunch of shots. He was 2 of 4, which is about as efficient shooting the ball as we've seen from him all year. He hit his three-point shot, and, you know, it was fine.
And the best stat line for KD Johnson, I'm holding up a big old zero right now. He had 0 turnovers.
We got to work on your hand signal for zero. Your fingers are like spread all the way apart, and it's just...
Doesn't matter.
It's confusing.
Well, zero. How about that? I just used one hand instead. Zero. He had 0 turnovers. So in 15 minutes of play, he had 1 assist, 2 steals, and 0 turnovers. And you know what? Maybe that's what it takes for KD Johnson to play better, is limited playing time. So then maybe he will take advantage of it, right, and see it as a bigger opportunity because he only gets less minutes. I'm not sure what it takes. But again, between Wendell Green, Zeb Jasper, Trey Donaldson, and KD Johnson, I'm okay with KD Johnson getting the least amount of minutes because Wendell Green, he's not shooting the ball well, but he can orchestrate the offense when he plays well. And last night, he didn't have a great game again, but I'm okay. I think he's a streaky guy where he can run your offense. He's your most experienced guard in this offense, and he needs some playing time. Zeb Jasper, he only had 3 points last night. You know my concerns about that. He's your starting shooting guard, but he won't shoot the basketball. But he doesn't turn the ball over. He had 0 turnovers last night. He only had 1 assist. He seems to be a body, but his defense is where Zeb Jasper really elevates himself, and he doesn't turn the ball over. Trey Donaldson, you know me. I think he should be starting right now. I think Trey Donaldson is your best guard on this team right now.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think he's in your top. I mean, I think he's one of your best two guards. I think it's him and Wendell. I think Wendell has had a slower start than we would like this year. I think the USC game, which was his worst game of the year, I think, he was hampered by injury. He was, and it was apparent when he didn't play the entire second half. I think if you get second half versus Washington Wendell, and you get the Trey Donaldson we've seen over the last week, those two can really work well together, and you almost need to keep one off the court at a time.
Yeah.
That way you have one guy that you trust to handle the ball, run the offense on the court that can make plays happen. I will say Trey Donaldson has the best vision on this team.
Yeah, and that's why I think he could be your starting guard, because your starting point guard, that is. Because you look, just comparing last night's game between Wendell Green and Trey Donaldson, Wendell Green shot the ball 9 times. He only made it twice. A point guard, they're supposed to score, and I know that the game of basketball has evolved into guards being extremely heavy trying to score.
In his defense, he was 1 of 3 in the second half and got to the line and
which
hit
is
all
fair.
6 free throws.
Which is
he
fair.
He was 1 of 6 in that first half where he was still struggling.
Right, I
second
agree.
Second half is what I'm talking about with Wendell.
If
you get that out of him, he's a different player than what we've seen all year.
But looking at Trey Donaldson, right, no, he didn't score a lot. He had 2 points on 1 of 2 shooting. But he knew he wasn't scoring and wasn't being as aggressive as a scorer. but he had 4 total rebounds, 1 offensive, 3 defensive. He had 7 assists, 1 steal, and 1 turnover, and only 1 foul, where in USC we saw him foul out of that game. So Trey Donaldson may not have scored, but he dished out 7 of them, which is at least 14 points if you just do 7 times 2. So Trey Donaldson ran the offense extremely well. I'm with you. I think his vision is unbelievable. You saw outlet pass to Jani Broome in transition. Nobody else on this team's making that pass.
He had another one where he hit Yoan in transition, and Yoan, because I mean, he's that baby giraffe out there. The legs are a little shaky. He's trying to get his bearings, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. It like hit him in the side of the chest.
It created
just one of those. And I feel like Auburn's had so many of these possessions all year where it's just like the ball's on the floor and it's chaos and it's just flying around in circles and neither team can grab the ball. It's like it's covered in butter or whatever, and it's just like nobody can secure it. But it was that was a moment that as he gets more experience, he may realize right now I can't hit the laser no-look pass to Yoan because he has zero clue it's coming.
Yeah, he may not realize I can make that pass. And so, no, I think this is the best we've felt about an Auburn win all season. I think this is probably the best we've felt after a game all season long. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Auburn basketball's win, 84-61 last night over Washington. I know not a ton of people got to watch it because it was streaming, right? It wasn't on actual TV. You had to pay to watch it.
Shout out Spectrum.
Yeah, that's
fair. Everybody who got Fubo TV trial.
Yeah, if you did that, credit to you, man. But again, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Auburn wins 84-61 in a dominant second half. They score 53 points in the second half. We have question of the day revolving Auburn basketball. When we come back, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. More of the Thursday edition of On the Line when we come back.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Question of the day here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Jacob Cohen, Carter Bird with you on ESPN.
I hit you with such a curveball right there.
You really did. You hit me with a stat or a fact that I just didn't even know existed until about 10 seconds ago. But we will not address that right now. Question of the day revolving around Auburn basketball. Probably ever. Yeah, that's actually fair. Probably never. Question of the day. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. With Auburn's 84-61 win over Washington last night, that wraps up non-conference play for the Tigers. They will play Florida on December 28th, which is, what day of the week is that? That is next Wednesday. So they will play Florida at home next Wednesday over at Neville Arena. So question to you and our listeners, is Auburn basketball now on the right track heading into SEC play? It was a 1-1 road trip to the West, right? You lost to USC in ugly fashion. You come out and you bounce back big against Washington. Is Auburn on the right track heading into SEC play?
Yes, because, I mean, look, you go on the road, you lose to USC in a game that I would argue neutral site, you win, because I don't think that game was reffed evenly. Let's say that. It felt... Really, I'll be honest with you. I thought both games out West, I thought the refs were a little bit soft.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it.
There was, what was it? The delay of game warning?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That
horrible.
One, it's a dunk, and the ball just happened to be like go off somebody's foot the other way.
Right. Well, sorry, he's too strong, right? And it's ridiculous. But for me to answer the question, I think so. I think Auburn is on the right track now. It is only one game against Washington. But I do think in the USC game, we saw some things that we were positive about. And we did mention it a little bit this week. Obviously, we've been talking a lot of football. But we saw some things in the USC game that we could be positive about. And we could see where there was maybe a turn being made for this Auburn team. Oh, and then they showed it in the Washington game.
They fought through a lot of adversity and showed a lot of fight, figured some things out. And I was encouraged.
Yeah, exactly.
The most encouraging loss I've seen out of Auburn basketball in a while.
Right. And then they get the win against Washington, where a lot of those things we saw in the USC game, they got better at in the Washington game, and it showed with a double-digit victory on the road. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Dak, you're on the line, man. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing great, man.
Good. I guess basketball first, and then I would like to talk about recruiting in football.
Absolutely.
But, I agree. I mean, the game against USC, the officiating was absolutely notorious, awful.
I agree.
But the thing that the ugly head that keeps popping up is our guard play, how out of control we are at times, especially when we're playing from behind. And luckily against Washington, you know, we played pretty much ahead the whole game, and you didn't see that. So that's my concern, number one, is how our guards play when we're playing from behind. We play like a bunch of high school kids playing out of control is what I see, especially from KD.
Agreed.
But there's a lot of time for improvement. And if you look at our schedule, we got to win all of our games at home and hope to win two or three on the road.
Agreed.
The way I look at it.
Yeah. So
what y'all think?
I would say that specifically with the USC game, yes, like turnovers were an absolute issue. I agree with you on KD. That was one of the worst games we've seen him play, and we've seen him go 0 of 14 in a game. So he just was out of control. He was turning it over. He had three of the worst turnovers I've ever seen in the second half, all in a row. But I do think that in the game of college basketball specifically, when it's so defined by runs and momentum, when the whistle started making a huge impact in that second half, I think this team started pressing. I don't think that in the SEC, I think the game's a lot more physical than what we saw on the West Coast, because I'll tell you what, there were some iffy fouls at best called out west. And so I think that maybe it'll be a little more even. Maybe it'll be a little more, consistent for both sides.
Right.
And maybe you won't see that disparity where it's 12-3 on fouls with 10-13 minutes left in the second half. I mean, that was insane in that game against USC. I think Auburn just got kind of they got down a little bit. The whistle was going against them. I think they got flustered. I think they started pressing, and I think that's what brought about that second half where you turn over 14 times. It's still happening too much. Like, Wendell Green can't have five turnovers. Granted,
that's right.
As your starting point
guard,
he
was a lot better in the second half against Washington than he was in the first half. But, I mean, the other one that I will talk about is Alan Flanagan played one of his worst games last night. He was not good. He was not good.
He turned the ball over a lot. What has killed me about this team is never have we had a night where all three of those guys played well. And I'm still waiting for that. And then one of the things that I'm looking forward to with another, you know, with the year behind them and with experience is I'm waiting to see how we do in clutch in the last minute with either us ahead or us down by one.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to still just bounce the basketball out there and then just heave up one? Or are we going to do something with the ball? That's what I want to see this time.
I'm with you on that. And you're going to see that in the SEC. We know there's close games in that conference.
One of my favorite things that I saw that made me laugh on Twitter was I think it was Ryan Russillo was doing draft prep on Jabari Smith. And he just posted a clip of Auburn's final possession versus Arkansas. And he said, I'm watching Jabari film, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was just Wendell Green dribbling the ball out and shooting from the logo.
Right. Yeah. Hey. Just talk about Auburn football recruiting when you come back, guys.
Yes, sir, we will. We got it on the schedule. That's exactly what we're talking about. When we come back, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Auburn football recruiting. It's coming up.
Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goh with Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Big thank you to Dak calling in the previous segment talking basketball. Dak, if you're still listening and you want to call back in, give your thoughts about recruiting from yesterday, we'd love to have you on. And anybody else that wants to call in and give your thoughts on Auburn football recruiting from early signing day yesterday, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And we are getting into it now. That early signing day, the period is still open, but yesterday is the big day that most of the people do it, right? They still have through tomorrow, technically, to do it, but most of the guys have done it or they're going to wait until February to do so. But you look at where Auburn ended up, and they secured a top 20 class. That's what Auburn did yesterday in the early signing period. They secured a top 20 class. They went from 50, 60 something all the way to the top 20, which is good for eighth in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, this what this staff did is nothing short of incredible. It was talked about a lot on signing day nationally. The impact that Hugh Freeze had in a short amount of time cannot be understated. It's still not where it's going to need to be at Auburn. We understand that, but that's coming. That's coming down the road. Right now, it's about getting quality depth. It's about building the foundation. 24 is going to be the cycle where you see the jump. Because right now, I guess on paper, this 16th ranked class on Rivals, I think it's a little bit lower. It's 19 on 247. I think it's 16 on 3. It's not that much different than the last couple classes, I guess, in terms of ranking. But considering where Brian Harsin had this thing, heck, I don't even know if you ask Brian Harsin to look at the definition of recruiting in the dictionary, I don't think he'd be able to find it, and I don't think he would have any idea what it meant, because the lack of effort was nothing short of just awe-inspiring. Just his lack of, because recruiting is the lifeblood of every program, and he just did not get that. He thought he could take random three-star going to a Sun Belt school and coach him up in the SEC West and win games, which is, and we also know that he's not a good coach. Well, Hugh Freeze has been in the SEC.
He knows.
Hugh Freeze has recruited at a very high level. And Hugh Freeze is hungry. And that is the biggest thing for me, because the effort that he showed on the trail is amazing. It really, really is. It's going to have impacts in 24, because when you don't have that hunger to recruit the high school and junior college level the way that Hugh Freeze is, transfer portal's a little different. You get Ole Miss. You get Ole Miss.
Yeah.
An Ole Miss class that is embarrassingly bad. 28, according to On3. And it's 37 on 247. I think it's lower than that on 51 on Rivals.
Where does that put them in the SEC overall? About 10 or so, probably?
Give me a second. I can find that out for you.
But while you're doing that, here's another thing I want to add to that. Not only does Hugh Freeze, is he committed to it and he knows the grind. What is it?
13th.
Hey, I remember a team that used to be there just this time last year.
They are ahead of Vanderbilt.
That's woo-hoo.
It. It's amazing the difference. Because Lane Kiffin's had 2 years to recruit this class.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze has had 2 weeks.
And Lane Kiffin, we know, though, he's worried about the transfer portal. He doesn't care.
Which I get, you can use that to kind of talk yourself down if you're in Oxford of panicking about this. But the transfer portal is not sustainable. Mm-mm. It's not. You're one bad transfer portal cycle away from being 5-7, 4-8,
because there's not as many guys in the portal compared to high school kids.
Jackson Dart's not Matt Corral.
Yeah,
he's not. he can't cover up that much stuff at the quarterback position. Quinshon Judkins is really, really good. So is Zach Evans. They need offensive linemen to block for him. And one of your biggest offensive line commits is going to be starting at Auburn next year.
And the thing about the transfer portal giveth, and the transfer portal taketh. Just because you get guys out of the transfer portal doesn't mean you're not going to lose any of your guys. And here's the thing about the portal as well. When you get guys out of there, you're getting them for 1-2 years, maybe.
So, okay. Well, that's the one thing that has changed, is you can get a guy.
You can.
And he, in theory, can have
3 or 4 years of eligibility.
Yeah.
He could.
Like a third of that number one greatest of all time Texas A&M class playing football somewhere else.
Right, but I'm saying on average, you're getting a guy out of the portal for, I would say, 2 years. When you get a guy from high school, you get him for at least 2 years, and you're going to develop him and make him better in your system, right? High school recruits pan out better than transfer portal guys long term. That's why recruiting in high school is better for the SEC. Yeah. That's why it works versus doing what Lane Kiffin's trying to do at Ole Miss. And what I was going to say about Hugh Freeze is, not only is he committed to high school recruiting, not only is he good at it, not only is he hungry to do it, Hugh Freeze enjoys high school recruiting. You heard him talk yesterday in his press conference about going and talking with the families and eating home-cooked meals and visiting with the guys. Like, Hugh Freeze enjoys high school recruiting, because I'm just going to be honest with you. If you don't enjoy it, you're going to be miserable. I mean, you're going to be miserable, and you're not going to be good at it, which means you're not going to be successful in the SEC. That's what happens in this conference in college football. So Hugh Freeze is good at it. He's hungry for it, and he enjoys it. Those are things that lead to a top 20 class in just 3 weeks on the job. Those are things that will lead to top 15, top 10, top 5 classes down the road if he continues to do this and gets the results on the field.
All right, so Kyan Lee, Keldrick Faulk, Tony Mitchell, Quay Rousseau, James Smith. Those are five guys that Brian Harsin couldn't get a foot in the door with. If he showed up to their houses, the kids and the families might say, "Who the heck are you?
Mom, get on the computer. We got to Google who this guy is."
Which, of course, he thinks everybody knows who he is, because that's who Brian Harsin is. But because he didn't put in the effort. Hugh Freeze in 2 weeks had you in the conversation for all of those guys and flipped two of them. He flipped Keldrick Faulk, probably the most important guy, because you need an edge really badly. And you can make the argument, look, you got in the conversation with the Carver kids, but Alabama had a 2-year head start on you.
Yeah.
Because also, I mean, nobody wanted to play for Brian Harsin, so they weren't exactly in good standing with Auburn. Auburn was not in good standing with them.
Right.
When Hugh Freeze took over. Auburn got in the conversation.
Which is a miracle in
itself. Got back to campus a bunch of times in those 2 weeks. At least made it a conversation. Tony Mitchell had been committed to Alabama forever. Forever. He was gone. He had wanted nothing to do with Auburn under Brian Harsin. And Zach Etheridge, credit to him, the effort, the relationship he built up there, and then Hugh Freeze. Auburn was 50-50 going into signing day, and it just went against him.
Yeah, it fell the other way.
Perhaps a little too noisy on some of the Auburn sites, gave Alabama a little window to lock him down. Maybe that's what happened. But Keldrick Faulk committed to FSU. And he says it on his presser when he signs. When he's sitting at the table with the microphone in front of him. He said, "Look, I always wanted to go to Auburn, but I couldn't." Why do you think that is?
Because Auburn never reached out. Auburn didn't want him. Auburn didn't have any interest.
Auburn did a poor job recruiting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They were not interested.
But Hugh Freeze, in 2 weeks, this is a kid that preaches relationships. That's the primary reason why he committed to FSU. Hugh Freeze built a relationship, and that you're close enough to home that you're able to steal him from FSU. And then Kyan Lee, the guy's committed to Ohio State. Ohio State's playing in the college football playoff right now. And you know what? Hugh Freeze said, "I don't care." Zach Etheridge said, "I don't care." Weston McGriff said, "I don't care." And they went and took him. And by the way, Auburn's got a pretty good track record of former Ohio State commit DBs at Auburn.
Which I love,
considering the previous two are your two starting corners for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep. Which I absolutely love. Anytime that Auburn can take a guy from Ohio State, I absolutely love it. And apparently, Ryan Day is just flabbergasted and just shocked that this happened, because back in the day, there was a time where once a guy was verbally committed to your school, other schools backed off, so Ohio State's going to have to adjust. If you missed that, Ryan Day had a quote that said that. He said,
"Stupid.
It's so crazy." He literally was saying, there used to be a time where when a guy was committed to a school, the other schools just backed off, so I guess we have to adjust, which, if you're an Ohio State fan, that ought to worry you a little bit. But Auburn said, yeah, we don't care about that. We're going to get Kyan Lee, and they did, and they pull him. He's a four-star corner. Auburn has 18 guys that have signed their letter of intent. Carter, you talked about Keldrick Falk. He's a big one. Darren Reed.
Is not?
247 has it as 18.
I've got it at 19 on three.
Which one am I missing? I don't know.
It's 19 on 247. I don't know what you're looking at.
It says 18. It says the letter of intent, 18 in parentheses.
Oh, it's 19 commits. Yeah, because
I'm saying like signed with the letter and everything. Yeah, you're thinking Jeremiah Cobb, too, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I'm not worried about that.
I'm not either. So you can go ahead and put him in there, four-star running back. So
if you want to include your transfers that have both signed whatever the official papers are that don't actually mean official anything.
Right.
You've got both of them on board now.
Yeah, exactly. So you look at these guys, and here's what I look at this is top 20 good enough? No. Is top 8 in the SEC good enough? No. But in a three-week period, 2.5, really, this is so impressive that I don't know there's many people that Auburn could have hired that could have done this.
You were in the 60s.
Think about all the names that Auburn was floating around, that were floating around to get the Auburn job. Out of all of those names, how many could have done this in your mind?
One other? Deion Sanders?
Yeah.
That's it?
I think so.
I mean, that's literally it.
And here's the thing, though. If Deion would have done this, it wouldn't have been all these defensive and offensive linemen. I can tell you that. It would have been a lot of those skill players that people have been talking about that Auburn doesn't have a ton of in this class. But I promise you, if Hugh Freeze does this the right way and he continues to do it what I think he's going to do, this is the correct way to build his first class. He came in and he addressed the two biggest problems Auburn has had is the offensive line and the defensive line, because you're losing guys on the defensive side and Auburn just never had guys on the offensive side. So he's coming in and he's getting these guys out of high school and saying, yeah, you're going to come with me for 3 or 4 years. I'm going to make you great. We're going to make Auburn great. And then we're going to fill in with skill guys from the transfer portal and then in 2024. So this is the correct way to do it. And to anybody that is worried about Auburn not having enough of those flashy, skill, fast guys, athletic guys, Auburn's got a few in here, and they're going to get one with Jeremiah Cobb, hopefully when he signs and commits in February. But Auburn's going to fill in with the transfer portal, and in the next couple of classes, Auburn's going to fill with those guys as well once they get both sides of the offensive and defensive line locked down.
Absolutely. By the way, there's a really funny post on the Ohio State message board for you.
Are they talking about Ryan Day?
They're saying NIL is creating socialism in college football. Oh, taking down superpower Ohio State for has-beens, never-was teams like Miami, Auburn, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Oregon, Louisville, and USC.
Yeah, because Auburn and Miami have never been anything in college football.
And USC.
And geez, that's as bad as Dabo Sweeney's quote from yesterday about the NIL.
Hope you're all happy if you were advocating for NIL.
Speaking of that, they're taking it well. Dabo Sweeney's comment, you want to read that and let, if anybody happened to miss what Dabo's comment was on the NIL yesterday? Because this was hysterical, and it doesn't make any sense, and it is, because if you remember, long ago, before NIL was official, Dabo said if players started getting paid, he would walk away from the game of football.
Dabo Sweeney, we built this program on NIL, probably not the NIL you're thinking of. We built this program in God's name, image, and likeness.
I think
we should throw it to the break right there. That's amazing. He got clowned on Twitter so hard for this. He thought he was so sly.
He thought he was doing
so
something clever. Big.
Oh, my God. The look on his face, the smug look on his face when he said that.
Look, praise God. Like, I get that part of it. But really, dude? Like, really, man? And we know his thoughts on NIL. He's not a fan of it. And he's having to adjust. And Clemson may not be adjusting at the right rate. I'm not too sure. We got to get to a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one. Talking more recruiting. We'll talk in hour number two as well. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll wrap up hour number one here on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goetz, Carter Bird with you inside the studio. 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. Wrapping up the first hour, talking Auburn football recruiting. I asked you yesterday, and I'll ask you again right now as we got a few more minutes. There's some big names on here, and there's some guys that are really, really going to make an impact for Auburn coming up in 2023. But who's the biggest win for Hugh Freeze in your mind on this recruiting cycle? I mean, we know some guys that were coming here. We know there's some big names, but who's the biggest win?
It's Keldrick Falk. It absolutely is him. Another name you could add to this list, we don't know about it yet, but potentially Tyler Scott. The corner that we knew is signed, he signed yesterday somewhere, but it was Auburn, Alabama, Texas, a lot of big name schools. If Auburn were to pull him, you add that on to Kyan Lee, you add that on to Keldrick Falk. Those are three significant wins for Auburn. Keldrick Falk is the biggest position of need, I think. I would put the Izavian Miller and Keldrick Falk are the two biggest wins for Auburn because they are positions of immediate need and they are big name players. Izavian Miller, I'm all but positive, is going to start at Auburn next year. You have Keldrick Falk, who I believe may need a little bit of time, but I think he can climb in the rotation. And if nothing else, just because of perception, it's a massive win. Same with Kyan Lee.
Well, speaking of perception, that's why I go with Connor Liu, flipping him from Miami with what Fair. They did on signing day yesterday. With the amount of money they've got running around down there right now, they signed a very impressive class. And getting Connor Liu to flip from Miami, who he had been committed to for a while, and getting him to flip to Auburn, I think that's a good perception as well, that Hugh Freeze was able to go into a big program out of state and get a guy like Connor Liu, who is really, really good. So I go with Connor Liu. I think he's a big one as well.
You know what they say about perceptions, though?
What's that?
Perceptions are not always reality. Shout out Ron Roberts, who tweeted that out this morning.
That is very true. That is very true.
The fact that we were talking about perceptions, I wanted to acknowledge that tweet.
Ron Roberts. Well, and speaking of some news we got yesterday as well, linebackers coach has been announced. Hugh
Josh
Freeze
Aldridge.
Sort of dropped it in his opening statement yesterday. What'd you think about that? You were there.
You know what? It was very casual how he dropped it in there, but I will say I think Josh Aldridge is going to be a good coach. There's some very encouraging stuff out there about him.
Well, he obviously knows his stuff because he was defensive coordinator at Liberty, and then when Hugh Freeze took the Auburn job, he coached them as the interim in their bowl game.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the exact maybe College Football Matrix or something. It's like an advanced analytics kind of company.
Yeah.
They had a tweet. I know that they had helped Auburn fill out their staff. They had a tweet about Matrix and Analytical. There it is. They had a tweet about Josh Aldridge saying that he, in their database, he's listed as a rising star. Here's the tweet. We love this guy, quote, rising star grade in our system. Totally on board with this ad by Hugh Freeze and can't wait to see his career arc continue to track up. Look, I think he's a young, up-and-coming guy. I think he's going to be hungry. I think that's everything you need at the linebacker position. And look, let's all due respect to C-Rob. the linebackers were the worst position on the defense this past year, and they're one of the more talented groups. You had a bunch of four stars and a five star in that room, and they were not very good. And they're a significant position of need. And you have zero high school, junior college, or transfer commits right now.
You got to go get some, no doubt about it. Wide receiver coach still open for Auburn. That's the last position group to get hired for a coach. Hour number one in the books. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Hour number two is coming up.
Production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're all doing well as the cold begins to roll in. It's going to drop like a rock over the next few hours, so be sure you stay warm, load up on food, whatever you got to do, as it's going to get a little chilly over the next couple of days. But again, hope you're all doing well on this Thursday afternoon. This is On the Line from 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Hour number one officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two is officially underway right here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, lots of Auburn basketball talk, Auburn football recruiting talk as well. If you missed any of it, be sure to go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. Just search On the Line, or you can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center. You'll find a commercial free right there. But here in hour number two, we're about to get to Terry on the phone lines. We'll talk to him. We'll talk some Auburn football recruiting. And then at 3:30, we'll talk to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, and talk to him about early signing day yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on the college football playoff semifinals coming up and some other big SEC bowl games. So looking forward to that conversation. But until then, phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. We'll start hour number two by going to the phone lines. And Terry, you're on the line, man. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Jacob, I'm right there with you on Trey Donaldson, by the way. He's the best. 100%. I think he's the best distributor of the ball. I think Wendell Green looks to shoot first and pass later.
Mm-hmm.
I think he will get his teammates involved, and his teammates tend to stand around when Wendell Green's got the ball.
I'm with you.
And not when Trey Donaldson has the ball.
I'm with you.
And he will make guys around him better.
I think the mentality of this Auburn team has shifted here in the last few days. You're seeing them move the ball a lot better.
They did last night, for sure.
Yes. And I think I think a lot of that can be attributed to Trey Donaldson getting more minutes. I think it shifted. Everybody's realized, oh, hey, like, if we move a little bit, things may open up a bit better for
us. If Bruce Pearl's looking for chemistry, it'll come with Trey Donaldson, not Wendell Green. I promise you.
I'm with you. I think Trey Donaldson should be starting on this team. I'm right there with you, Jacob. Absolutely.
I'm not there. On recruiting, guys, I'm going to make a prediction. In the next 14 to 18 months, if recruiting continues to go downhill, Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin will be looking for an NFL job.
I can see that. I think he's probably looking for an NFL job as we speak.
I don't think he's going to get an NFL job. I don't think he's going to get an NFL. I don't think he's close to getting an NFL job right now. Right now with the fact that who are the last two college coaches to go to the NFL? Urban Meyer,
kind of an NFL
Urban
pedigree.
Meyer, and Matt Rule. Mm-hmm. Those didn't go well.
Yeah.
He's not exactly a stable personality, you know, that you want to run your multi-billion dollar organization, your football team. I don't see anybody taking that chance, especially even, like, it's going to get held against him in some fashion, and I don't think it's necessarily fair because he was 32, his Raiders tenure was not good. And that's going to get held against him. That's just another check the box for a reason why not to hire him. I think there's a better chance that this blows up in Lane Kiffin's face at Ole Miss and they collapse and they crater than he leaves them for the NFL. I think that's a much better chance based on what I'm watching right now.
Carter, with all due respect, Bill Belichick ain't got much of a personality either.
That's fair.
Well, no. I'm saying he is not a stable personality. Bill Belichick's the epitome of a stable personality. He's somebody you know what he's going to say at the microphone every time. We're on to Cincinnati.
When he got Tom Brady.
Yeah.
When he has Tom Brady.
Yeah. Well, look, we know that it's going down at Ole Miss right now, that the recruiting is not good. Lane Kiffin is not a fan of recruiting. He doesn't really do it a whole lot, which, again, hindsight's 20-20 here, Terry, but I think Auburn may be a blessing in disguise that they didn't get Lane Kiffin there at the end and they got Hugh Freeze.
My elbow hurts.
That's okay. That's all right. I know you hate to be right, Terry.
Yeah, I tell you. California's cool naturally, but I just think the one I think the most, Jerry Jones, he screws up everything, and he'll be the kind of guy to give Lane Kiffin a chance.
Very well might be the case. I'm not sure, but hey, you never know.
Right. Would that not be a Jerry Jones type move?
I could see that. Yeah, it would be a Jerry Jones move to make that big name higher, right? Doesn't necessarily make sense coaching wise, but it would be that big name, right? I could see that.
Well, he already has an NFL pedigree. Carter, I see what you're saying. His tenure at the Raiders was not good, but he's probably learned quite a bit there too.
Yeah, and
he's
I'm with you.
47 years old.
Yeah, he's older now, which could be. Yeah. But again, I mean, he's at Ole Miss, and what is he doing at Ole Miss that gives you any hope in the NFL, right? I just don't know if he could do it.
I think things are trending down at Ole Miss. He hit his 10-win season. He went to 8 wins this year. Recruiting went about as badly as it possibly could this year. And then if he doesn't hit really big on this transfer portal class, you could be staring at 6-6 next year.
Okay, what are we going to hear out of Auburn for the transfer portal the next 10 days or so, every 2 weeks?
I think
you're going to see a couple.
After the bowl season ends.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some that take place. It feels like there's a lot of momentum with Ben Scott, the Arizona State center. But that's probably the next one. If you were going to ask me who I think is going to be the next one to pop, I guess the next one to come on board. Past that, I don't know. I know that Auburn is going to continue to add.
Obviously look for a quarterback, right? I mean,
tackles
and quarterback,
interior, and what, defensive linemen, linebackers.
Yeah. What makes it so tough is just, you just don't know. You don't fully know who's going to enter the portal. Obviously you can get messages and see smoke and stuff like that, but you just don't know until they do it. Right.
All right, Terry, I got something for you.
Okay.
Ole Miss this next season, they're going to start the season 2-4. Because they play Mercer, that's one of the wins, at Tulane. Tulane's going to beat them. Then you have Georgia Tech at home, they'll win that. Then they're at Alabama, LSU at home, Arkansas at home. They're going to lose all three of those. And then they have their bye
week. They'll beat Arkansas.
I don't think so, because that's at the end of this opening. Like, this past year, with all these transfers that they brought in, which they're going to have to do again, the schedule was a joke for the first 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it allowed them to figure out who everybody was, gel, and be the team that we saw this year. Well, this schedule, week two, that Tulane team is better than Ole Miss. They just straight up are. They're getting their quarterback back. They're getting their best defensive player back. Like, that's a really good Tulane team. And I think they're going to – it's at Tulane, too. Like, this schedule's a lot harder than we've seen Ole Miss have at the beginning of the season.
Okay, what I was going to ask you is, where is the Arkansas game at?
It's at home for Ole Miss.
It's at home. Okay.
Which makes it, you know, toss up.
I'll give them that one. I will.
Then they have to go to Auburn. They get A&M at home. They go to Georgia. They go to Mississippi State.
Oh, they have Georgia as their crossover next year?
Yeah.
Brutal.
Georgia and Vanderbilt. So it kind of evens out.
Yeah, which definitely evens out.
Vanderbilt.
Hey, watch out now. Watch out for Vanderbilt.
On. You're kidding, right?
Maybe.
You have to be.
Hey, they yeah. They started winning SEC games, Terry.
They won two of them. Back to back, too.
Well, that's two. That's as many as Brian Harsin won.
Dang. Wow.
Got it.
Take care, guys.
Appreciate it, Terry. Merry Christmas. We don't talk to you tomorrow, man. Let's get back to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Dak, you're on the line, man. Welcome in.
Hey, guys, again.
Hey, man. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, hey, so I said if Lane Kiffin did not take this Auburn job that he would end up in Florida in the next 2 years. I still say that.
Florida retired or Florida coaching?
No, I think Florida coaching. I think
Which school?
Well, I think Florida. I think he's going to end up at Florida.
Interesting.
And it is roaming toward that way right now. The Gator Nation is not very happy with what they've got right now.
They are not.
They are not. And, you know, that's actually a decent prediction because Florida is one of those schools that it's the state school, it's the big school, and it kind of recruits itself in a little bit, right? And for a guy like Lane Kiffin that doesn't like to just go out and recruit nonstop, that may be not a terrible idea. That's a good point, Dak.
Well, I said if he turned down the Auburn job, that's the job he's waiting on. I still think that. I still believe that. But he still has to have some success. He reminds me a lot of Deion Sanders. He wants his coaches to do the coaching during the week, and then he do the offense and the head coach on Saturday. And so, you know, I don't know if that's going to work out for him.
Right, and he wants all the glamour. There's no doubt. He doesn't shy away from that.
Dak, are you telling me that Florida fans, they're not happy about Billy Napier with less than a minute left kicking a 41-yard field goal to extend their streak without being shut out to 436 games?
They're not happy at all.
That's an impressive streak, I'll be honest.
And where did they end up in recruiting-wise? I didn't even pay attention.
I actually have it pulled up over here. I was just looking at it earlier. They are 12th in 247. They are 10th on 3, and they are 12th on Rivals. But I mean, their signing day, their kind of lead-up to signing day, they kind of were a little shaky. I think they lost a guy or two to other schools. I mean, they signed most of their guys, obviously, and they still, it's top 12 class, but I don't think it finished as strong as they were hoping. I don't think their fan base loved that.
Look, guys, Florida should be finishing in the top 6 every year.
You're right.
Agreed.
There's no reason.
You're right.
They shouldn't be in the top 6. But and I'm on my last question.
Yep.
Is there any talk at all who Hugh is going to get as receivers coach? Because I think this is one of the most important hires that he can make at Auburn, because we have been lagged behind for so long at receiver coach.
Yep. Agreed.
Any word at all about
I've heard that Jacob Peeler, the receivers coach at Missouri, is a name to watch. But I think right now, if that is the guy, which timeline wise, it could make sense. Missouri might be waiting to get through their bowl game, which I believe plays tomorrow. So that would be the name that, if you're asking me right now, I would keep an eye on.
But this has been another one of those where everything's been extremely close to the chest. They haven't really – and Hugh Freeze even talked about it yesterday, Dak, that he hasn't been fully focused on that. He was focused on recruiting, right? So he said he was getting close. I'll be honest, I hated to see Ike Hillier go. Obviously, we didn't expect him to be retained, but I thought he was really, really good and was going to do some special things here if he were to be here long term. But no, this is another one of those that has just been really close to the chest, but I think we'll know in the next week.
Guys, I would do anything if Dale McGee gets hired. I know as far as experience at receivers, he doesn't have a lot, but I mean, he didn't have no experience at running back coaching either when he went to Georgia. And I think as far as the future of recruiting, if Dale is on this staff, man, the sky's the limit. But, you know, it's a long shot.
I think that's definitely a long shot. I think what he's co-offensive coordinator in title at Georgia. Like, I don't know if he has some sort of associate head coach title or something. You'd have to throw something extra on top of receivers coach, I think, to get him. But
no,
I don't know what titles Auburn really has left to get.
Yeah, I was hoping, just shooting for the stars there with Dale.
It's a nice name for sure.
Del McGee is one of those names that is like the dream would always be to bring him back to Auburn and see what sort of damage he could do on the trail because of you look at what he's doing in Georgia. Imagine what he could do at his alma mater, I think it's that's and something that's been very intriguing.
Right, and look, when you look at the grand scope of things, the receivers are with the quarterback coach 60% of the time. I mean, it could work out. Mm-hmm. I mean, but he'd have to have some type of title that would entice him to come. And
yep.
Even though he's an old guy, I mean, he's got it made where he's at right now.
Yeah,
he does.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good gig going right now.
Yeah, but it sure would be nice to have him back.
No doubt about it, man. Hey, Dak, we appreciate the call, brother.
Thanks, man.
Yep,
appreciate
Merry
it.
Christmas to you, Dak, and we appreciate you calling in. 334-321-1390. A couple good calls to start off hour number two.
Yeah, I think it's the receiving coach hire is going to be interesting.
It already is because we're just kind of like waiting. Right?
It's close.
It's definitely close.
Hugh said at his presser it's a few days away.
But we're still just kind of sitting around and waiting on it.
Yeah, I think that's the priority now, and locking down actual linebackers.
Oh, you're saying that you need to like go and get a couple since there's zero right now?
I mean, Auburn could always run a 4-7 defense next year. I don't know how that'd do against a run. You might shut down everybody's passing game, though.
Yeah, yeah. Which, hey, with the SEC going the way it is, I mean, maybe that's the new meta, right? Just go run 4-7 and just... Just don't worry about the run.
Is Mississippi State still running the air raid next year?
I don't know. I wouldn't think they would just up and change it, right?
I mean, if you were going to change it, this offseason would be the time to do it.
I don't know why they would. I don't know if they've even gone that far, to be honest.
You hired your defensive coordinator as head coach. So if you were going to change the offense, this is kind of the time period you could do it.
Yeah, but they've had success with that.
I just was thinking about teams that if you just ran a bunch of DBs out there that could match up with Auburn well.
Interesting. Well, again, yeah, talking all things Auburn football recruiting, talking signing day from yesterday. If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll have question of the day. It's about Auburn basketball when we come back. Then we'll have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. So join us on the phones at 330. All that coming up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Question of the day here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goh with Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Transitioning to basketball for just a few minutes before we get to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He'll come up at 3:30. Question of the day, obviously Auburn wins last night. They beat Washington 84-61. They go 1-1 out west. They lose to USC 74-71 on Sunday. They beat Washington 84-61. They are 10-2 coming into SEC play. And Carter, question of the day to you, myself, and our listeners. Is Auburn on the right track heading into SEC play?
I think you have to feel that way. I mean, I feel, if nothing else, this first conference game, I feel infinitely better about Jahni Broome matching up with Colin Castleton after watching him on the West Coast, because I thought he figured out over the course of the USC game what he has to be going forward. And then I thought the Washington game was just the embodiment of that, as he drops 18 points, 9 of 17 from the field. Liked to see him get to the free throw line, did not, but he grabbed 8 boards, 5 assists. How about that? I didn't notice that until right now. The big man, second on the team in assists.
He had a nice
dish
to Wendell Green on a backdoor cut. That was really nice. He had a nice little dish off down low. You know, you look at Auburn and you look at what they've done in the non-conference schedule. I mean, there's no games on here where you're just like, wow, that's just a fantastic win, right? There's no ranked wins on here. But you do have wins against Winthrop, which, okay. You've got a win against Northwestern, which is a solid win. You have a win against...
It's getting better, too.
Right.
I don't know if you've kept up with Northwestern this week at all.
Probably not as much as you have.
But they have figured something out, and they aren't playing great teams. They played DePaul and UIC this week, and they were 8.5 and 14-point favorites, and they won those games by... I think they won by 37 and 38.
Hey-o.
like they sort of starting to look like a team that might make some noise in the Big Ten.
That'd be nice. And so Auburn has an ugly win over them.
They're up to 43 in the KenPom, by the way.
Northwestern is. Mm-hmm. Really? Good for them. Good for them. Gives you something to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Wow, there you go. So Auburn has a win over them. Auburn has a win over St. Louis, which is a tournament team. Auburn has a win over Colgate, which could very well be a tournament team. And Auburn has a loss against Memphis and USC, who I think are probably tournament teams as well. USC, maybe, maybe not, but could be. And so you look at what Auburn has coming up. They start on next Wednesday. They're home versus Florida, at Georgia, home for Arkansas, and then at Ole Miss. Those are the next four games for Auburn. Going into those games, after last night's performance, I feel better about these coming games that are on the schedule. After the USC game, and really before the USC game, after the Georgia State game, I was worried. I was worried because Auburn's offense was non-existent. Guard play was not really consistent.
By the way, did you see... There's reason to feel more optimistic about that Arkansas game. Did you see that? Nick Smith Jr. is out for an indefinite amount of time with a knee injury.
I feel like I saw that, but maybe I didn't.
So that's their second.
Okay, player. Got you. That is their second player.
That's stud.
Yeah.
That's the guy that people were saying was going to be the freshman of the year.
Oh, no, I didn't. I did not see that. No, I didn't. Wow.
So they're down their two of their best players
right now.
Which stinks, but like.
I mean, it gives Auburn a chance.
For Auburn's sake, like, you have to feel more confident about that game.
Especially being in Neville Arena.
Yeah, it's a home game, and it's going to be definitely, at least in some capacity, a shorthanded Arkansas team, potentially severely shorthanded.
And it's on January 7th, so the students will be back at Auburn. Yes. So it'll be a very loud and ruckus Neville Arena. But no, I did not see that. That is big news for Arkansas. Bad news, but
yeah. I mean, it's awful news, but I just thought it was interesting that Arkansas just seems to be right now heading into conference play a little bit snake bit right now.
Yeah, and again, you hate to see that, but Auburn's next four, Florida, Georgia, Arkansas, Ole Miss, home against Florida, Arkansas, on the road against Georgia, Ole Miss. I think Auburn's starting to figure some things out, and I think this West Coast trip helped them quite a bit because they figured out a little bit on their offense. Defense has been fine, right? We know the defense is going to keep them at just about every game they play, but I'm hoping that they found something with the inside-out offense, the high-post offense with Jahni Broome, Jalen Williams, Dylan Cardwell, Chris Moore even, who had a solid game last night, work from the inside out. I still think Trey Donaldson should be a starter. I think he's that good. I think he's that talented. Wendell Green, you hoped he gets to find his shot and gets fully healthy. We knew he was a little banged up going out on this West Coast trip. You look for guys on and off the bench to just step up and play their role. And I think Auburn hopefully is starting to find a little bit of a stride where they can start SEC play with a couple of wins. Look, Florida's not a great team. All right. They're just not. They're not all that. You pull up their resume so far. Florida's 7-5, folks. I mean, they're not. This is not a Florida team that we've come in to be used to. I mean, their losses are they've lost in the last week and a half or so. They've beaten Stetson. They lost to a top five UConn team by 20. They beat Ohio, and then they lost to Oklahoma by 9. So this is a decent Florida team, but nothing solid by any means.
They're 51 in the KenPom. They're a team that is talented. I mean, it's got some talent. It's got obviously one of the best big men Auburn's going to see all year long.
I like this game being at home, though.
They're not that great of an offensive team. Mm-mm. When you look at them, they're 72nd in the KenPom adjusted offensive efficiency. They're 36th on defense. They lost to a good Xavier team. They lost to a good West Virginia team. They got smoked by a really good UConn team, and they lost to a good Oklahoma team. They don't have zero of their wins. Would you say this is a good win?
Right.
Stony Brook, 336 in the KenPom. Kennesaw State, 212.
Florida State somehow 150 despite being one of the worst teams I've seen in the Power Six.
Yeah.
Oregon State 220.
Hey, they beat Louisville, bro.
Florida A&M 357, Stetson 255, and Ohio 159. They have not beaten a good team yet this year. And they're going to go on the road to Auburn on Wednesday. Going to be fascinating to see how they stack up in that game.
Auburn's a better team. Auburn's more talented. They're a better team. They should win this game against Florida.
I agree.
They should go on the road and beat Georgia. They will have a tough test against Arkansas, but it sounds like it's a little bit of a depleted Arkansas team. They should go on the road to beat Ole Miss, and then they've got a talented Mississippi State team coming in.
What's interesting is immediately following the Auburn game, Florida's going to have potentially a big bump because they've got a very favorable SEC schedule. Texas A&M at home, Georgia at home, LSU on the road, Missouri at home. Right now, they're projected to win all four of those games. If they go on a run, maybe they figure something. If Auburn gets that win, maybe they figure something out after Auburn, and it just continues to pump up that Auburn resume.
You'd love to see it. We know Auburn's got a favorable January in SEC schedule. It seems like they're starting to put things together as SEC play rolls around next Wednesday night against Florida at 6 o'clock in Neville Arena. When we come back, we'll have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us here on the line.
With Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goetz, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Welcoming in our Thursday guest at 3:30. It's Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, hope you're doing well. We've got a lot to get into, so we will jump right into it. Of course, yesterday, the quote, early signing day, most notably as the national signing day now, was a big day around the conference. So your take on how some teams performed yesterday in early signing day?
Yeah, I mean, to me, obviously Alabama and Georgia being at the top one, too, that was, not a surprise. But, we were looking back a year ago and, the storyline was this big battle between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, and hey, Alabama's not on top anymore. Take that, Alabama. A&M is here to stay. And now we look a year later, and A&M's class is around 14, 15, and Alabama's back on number one, stacking a class. They got two stud in-state D linemen yesterday from Alabama, and before they got them, the class was already number one. So like that just tells you how absolutely ridiculously stacked this class is, and any reports of Alabama's demise were greatly exaggerated. They are not going anywhere, and Saban's just reloading. But outside of that, I thought it was a great class for Brian Kelly. All those reports of can Brian Kelly recruit? Is he going to be able to fit into the culture there in Louisiana? I think that he proved that he can there. It was a nice class for Tennessee, led by Nico Iamaleava, and then Auburn, I thought, was a great story with Hugh Freeze. We know, as soon as he was hired, he had hit the ground running and was out recruiting, and it paid off because they got some big names here in the last couple weeks. And for them to jump into the top 20, I thought was outstanding and already moving mountains that Brian Harsin never moved there at Auburn.
So when you talk about this Alabama class being as good as it was, how does it stack up to Texas A&M's class last year that was the greatest class of all time? And then also, is 14 the lowest we've seen Jimbo Fisher, the lowest his class has been at A&M?
Yeah, I'd have to go back. That's a good question. I'd have to go back and look because even at Florida State, it felt like he was putting together top 10 classes every year. So, yeah, that's probably the lowest they've had in a while now. They're going to hit up the transfer portal. They just got a cornerback from North Carolina today, and I think they're going to try to build a little bit that way. But, in comparison, look, the A&M class last year was outstanding. Don't get me wrong. It was a fantastic class, and they deserved all the accolades they got. But here we are a year later. I think eight of those kids already transferred or are in the portal. I think three of those were five stars. So, yeah, it doesn't mean a hill of beans if you can't keep the kids. And, that's what's so interesting, guys, is it used to be all about that February signing day. I mean, we used to have recruiting bashes and all this. And if you lost a kid, to another school. It was crushing. It was crushing to your program. Well, then they introduced the early signing period. And it was like, all right, we'll try to get these kids in December, and then, you know, we'll try to get a couple more in February. But the transfer portal has changed all this now. I mean, it really doesn't mean much. You know, you look at what Brian Kelly did last year in year one at LSU. He's coming in there trying to pick up all the scraps from that Ed Ogeron left behind, and did a pretty good job of building a good class in year one. But many of LSU's playmakers this year came from the transfer portal. It came after signing day, and that's how Brian Kelly built much of his team. So, yeah, I mean, look, if you're disappointed with your recruiting class, you know, what your coach has done, don't worry about it. I mean, you can still go build your roster through the transfer portal. So it does allow for much more flexibility, and I think that's what makes it that much more entertaining for us as college football fans.
Chris, when you look at Auburn's recruiting class, obviously Hugh Freeze was hired and had 3 weeks, 2.5 at most, to come in and salvage what was a non-existent recruiting class for Auburn under the Brian Harsin era. What does it say about Hugh Freeze as a recruiter to do what he did, pulling a top 20 class?
Well, I think it was outstanding. I mean, you know, because the day Hugh Freeze got hired, let's face it, there was a lot of negativity on social media and in the headlines from outsiders. And what this shows is that his staff was able to block out the noise and get to these 17, 18-year-old kids and say, look, don't listen to any of that stuff that's being said out there. We're building a program here, and, you know, we believe you're a great football fit. And, you know, just looking at the class overall, what stands out to me is a ton of defensive players that I think are going to play immediately. You know, the Keldrick Falk, that was a big pickup. I think, you know, there's a chance he's going to start on the D-line immediately. Daron Reed was outstanding. Kyan Lee, the DB, you know, steal him away from Ohio State, was outstanding. So I think they're going to lean on a lot of those guys to play immediately, because they did lose a lot on that defense, particularly up front. So you got to replace a lot of guys there. But I think they're not done. You know, I think they're going to try to start to build up on the offensive side of the ball through the transfer portal, because, you know, that's Hugh Freeze's bread and butter. And, you know, we know they've been eyeing some quarterbacks here and there, been talking to some offensive linemen. Wouldn't be surprised if they get a receiver or two. So this roster's not yet built yet, but this was a great jump start for year one. And, you know, we used to always say a rebuild. It's really not a rebuild necessary. I mean, Auburn is still going to bring back a good number of guys from last year, and there's a good foundation there already to build around. So, yeah, like I said, I thought it was an outstanding day for Hugh Freeze yesterday. I don't know what you guys thought, but great start to the program.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, it didn't go maybe best case, like pipe dream, if everything fell perfectly, but I think it was an impressive day, to say the least. Since Hugh Freeze has taken over, Auburn has flipped 8 Power 5 commits to different schools to Auburn and signed them, including like guys from FSU, Ohio State, Tennessee, Arkansas, Ole Miss. What does that say about Hugh Freeze and this staff and what they've done on the trail and the relationships they've been able to form in just, what, 2.5 weeks, basically?
Yeah, I mean, the most simplest form is he's better than Brian Harsin. You know, he's doing stuff that Harsin was never able to do. So,
that's fair.
That's a positive right there. But, yeah, I mean, I think it just speaks to how good of a coach he is and building this staff up. And, you know, as much as everybody loved Cadillac and maybe wanted him to get the head coaching job, Hugh Freeze has already got a lot of those relationships with high school coaches and knows the area very well from his time at Ole Miss. He's recruited Mississippi and Alabama and Florida and Georgia. So he knows his way around the state and around the area. And so that, you know, when you look at this class, you see a ton of kids from the state of Alabama, from Georgia, from Florida. So, yeah, I think he's going to be just fine. And, you know, next step is go prove it out on the field. Let's see the brand of football that he's going to bring. And I think it's going to be an exciting, you know, fun offense to watch. And like I said, with this class, all the defensive players you brought in here, if we could see a lot of these 4- and 5-star kids on the field next year, I think Auburn's going to be cooking with something.
Speaking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, he joins us every Thursday here on the show as bowl season really starts to get into the thick of things. We've seen one SEC team already play Florida with a disappointing showing against Oregon State. Of course, they had a bunch of transfers and stuff like that. They end up 6-7 on
the
year.
Still haven't been shut out in 436 games, though.
Thank goodness for that, right? We've seen Florida already lose in bowl season. You've got Missouri playing Wake tomorrow, Arkansas and Kansas, Ole Miss Miss Texas Tech next week. We've got a lot of bowl games coming up in the SEC. The ones outside of the playoff, we know how bowl season has become. A lot of guys transfer, sit out. Nevertheless, what are you looking for in SEC bowl games before we get into the playoff games?
Well, the shocking one, the news that came out this past week with Alabama and Bryce Young and Will Anderson both going to play in the Sugar Bowl. I think that's monstrous for them. I know a lot of Alabama fans that are going to make that trip to New Orleans because, look, you know, it's not a playoff, but you go to the Sugar Bowl, it's a pretty good bowl game to go to, you know, the New Year's Six. And I was frankly shocked. I mean, most mock drafts you look at right now, Bryce Young is projected number one overall, and Will Anderson's projected either number two or number three overall. The fact that both those guys are going to play in their bowl games, it's a risk. You know, you risk injury anytime you step out on the field, but I think it says a lot about trying to finish the season on a high point for Alabama. The worst thing for them is to go into the offseason with the bad taste in their mouths of losing a bowl game to Kansas State. So that's pretty surprising. They're going to be heavy favorites now in that game with Bryce Young and Will Anderson both playing. Excited to see what Tennessee looks like in the Citrus Bowl. I know this is going to be a chance for Joe Milton to kind of set the foundation and build some momentum going into next season, being that guy that's going to replace Hendon Hooker. Obviously, they're going to have to find some new receivers, but I think that's going to be big for them. I know that they focused a lot on getting some good defensive players on that recruiting class yesterday and then picking up a couple guys in the transfer portal. I think they got a BYU linebacker yesterday. So going to be interested to see what Tennessee looks like, at least trying to build some momentum going into the offseason. And then, I think LSU's got a nice test going against Purdue. And it's a Purdue team that already lost the head coach. Their quarterback opted out, their leading receiver opted out, and their leading tight end opted out. So if Brian Kelly can't win this one, then he's got bigger issues than the coaching. So those are just kind of a few of the things. I'd like to see Eli Drinkwitz beat up a good Wake Forest team tomorrow. I think that would be a big feather in his cap with Brady Cook, at quarterback. He's going to try to build some momentum going into the offseason. And they're losing Dominic Lovett, but the big one was they got Luther Burden to announce that he's sticking around. And it's crazy that kid coming off his freshman year has to announce, I am coming back, but that's where we are with college football. So, interested to watch them. And, yeah, I think we've got some really, really good bowl matchups. I mean, obviously Mississippi State, the drama of, following the death of Mike Leach, Jack Arnett kind of thrown into it. And he's going to be the head coach. And I don't know if you guys saw the helmets they're going to wear, but it's got the pirate symbol on the side of the helmet, so that's going to be very cool, honoring Mike Leach. But again, Illinois, Brett Bielema has done a really good job with that team this year. Defense has played very well, so I think there's some really good SEC bowl matchups. I'll be at the one next Wednesday in Houston. It'll be Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze, or Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin going up against Texas Tech, and I've been told there's going to be a lot of Texas Tech fans at that game. So Quinshon Judkins, a chance to run all over Texas Tech's defense and have him build some momentum going into next year as being one of the best running backs in the SEC. So some really good bowl games, and man, just happy. We're going to have a ton of football to watch in the next 2 weeks.
I guess talking about Ole Miss, I feel like I'd be remiss to bring them up, because if they lose that game with the way that yesterday went, and yesterday felt like it went about as poorly as it could, where is Ole Miss going to be? Like, where are they trending? What are they going to turn to this offseason to get back to where they need to be in 2023? Because things don't look stellar.
Yeah, it's a great point, because it's a fan base that Lane has already lost, half the fan base with the flirtations with Auburn and one foot in, one foot out the door and all that. So he's got some trust issues there with that fan base. He's really got to work hard to build back that trust and let them know, I'm not going anywhere, I'm happy at Ole Miss, I want to be here. But, man, there's a lot of stuff he's got to do. And you talked about yesterday with their recruiting class falling from the top 20 all the way back to, I think, 36 where they were last night. Like, that's not good. That's not good to be behind some of these other schools like Missouri and Kentucky in the recruiting rankings. So I know what he did a year ago. He built much of his roster through the transfer portal like LSU did. I expect Lane's going to do that again, dip back into the transfer portal and try to get a bunch of guys that way. But it's just not sustainable. You can't do that every year. The bulk of your team has to be built through recruiting, and then you fill in a couple holes here and there with transfer portal. You can't be building half your team through the transfer portal every year. It's just not sustainable. So You're right. There is a lot of issues at Ole Miss right now. But, yeah, if they can beat a good Texas Tech team in the bowl game, it's so silly. It sounds so simple to say, but you win your bowl game, fans are fat and happy and feeling good about themselves going into the spring game. Then if you lose, man, it's just puts a negative cloud over your program going into the spring.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. We got a few more minutes. Let's get into the playoff games because no show next week, so we won't get to talk to you between now and then. Obviously, Michigan TCU in the first semifinal game, and then Georgia and Ohio State. Your predictions for those two games before we'll get a chance to talk to you about the national championship game in the new year, but your predictions for the two playoff games.
Yeah, I've had a couple people tell me that Georgia, don't sleep on Ohio State. I mean, you know, we're all assuming that Georgia was the best team in the country this year. They're undefeated, ran through the SEC undefeated. But we saw some holes in that second half of the SEC championship game. Mm-hmm. People ran with this narrative that, oh, they had their starters out. No, they didn't. They had their starters in there, and Garrett Nussmeier was torching that secondary. I think C.J. Stroud has had a year where he's kind of underachieved, and I know he wants to go out there and prove that he deserves to be a top five pick in next year's draft. So I would not sleep on Ohio State, and I think this could be a shootout. And if Stetson Bennett turns the ball over once or twice, you know, what happens? How does Georgia respond if they're behind? You know, because they're so used to getting a lead, sitting on that lead, running the football, milking the clock, you know, scoring touchdowns and all that. So that one intrigues me a lot. I'm still going to pick Georgia, but, man, I've had multiple people tell me that they're betting on Ohio State in the upset. The other game, I just think Michigan's been so, so good. I know TCU has been fun to watch. They've kind of been the storybook Cinderella story of the year. But I think at the end of the day, they just don't have the weapons. They don't have the big dogs that Michigan has, rather, particularly on that defense. And it looks like Michigan is a team on a mission. Like, last year they got to the playoff, and it was like, man, all right, well, that was good enough. This year they came back even more relentless with that defense and the offense and the run game and said, no, that's not enough. We want to win this whole thing. And so I think Michigan takes out their frustrations on TCU, and I think they win big. And then I think we get a Georgia-Michigan rematch from last year's first round. But, again, I keep having people tell me, man, the TV networks will be tripping over themselves if they could get an Ohio State-Michigan national championship, you know, almost like when we had Duke play North Carolina in Coach K's final game. So, yeah, I think that would be awesome, but for the SEC's sake, I hope they're wrong, and I hope Georgia's in the game.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, who joins us every Thursday here on the show. Man, we appreciate you and your time, as always. Let everybody know where they can keep up with you and everything you're doing through bowl season.
Yeah, just Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. We got the video version up on YouTube. And, yeah, we're breaking down all the recruiting classes, all the big storylines of yesterday. And, man, there's so much happening every day in the transfer portal, in and out, you know, and all that. So we're keeping all up to date on that every day on Locked On SEC.
We appreciate your time, man. Hey, no show next week, so enjoy the day off on Thursday. And Merry Christmas to you, man.
All right, guys. See you in 2023.
That's right.
Appreciate it,
Chris. That is Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He joins us every Thursday here on the show. We got to get to our final break. We'll come back, have a few more minutes. We'll wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line, a big thank you to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He joins us every Thursday at 3:30 here on the show, so we appreciate him taking the time and joining us, as he has for a long, long time here on the show. So we appreciate him giving us his thoughts on SEC recruiting yesterday and signing day, his thoughts on Auburn and Hugh Freeze, and his predictions for the college football playoff. We'll have to talk about that tomorrow because no shows next week, so we'll talk about the playoff a little bit tomorrow.
Jack, if you're out there, you're coming on the show tomorrow.
Yep, if Jack Hudden is listening, you will be in studio at least for an hour, if not both, tomorrow. So if you missed any of today's show, be sure to go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center or just wherever you get your podcast. Just search On the Line. You can find it commercial free just like that. But we've got a couple of minutes, and just again, a reminder that no shows next week, just to kind of let everybody know, remind you, we'll have a show tomorrow. tomorrow, right? Us in the Drive, we'll have a show tomorrow, and then no shows all next week. We'll be off for an extended Christmas slash New Year's break. So yes, looking forward to that. I know you and I are traveling quite a bit over the next few days. So,
by the way, as you were talking, another Texas A&M player hit the portal, which is just a normal Thursday at this point.
Sounds about right. Is it a 4 or 5 star? Is it a big one or no?
I don't know. It said reserve defensive tackle.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I mean, still, that's been the trend, though, is Texas A&M, sure, they had the best recruiting class in the history of recruiting last week or last year, but they've lost quite a bit of those guys. So doesn't really matter if you can't keep them for more than a year. But like Chris was saying, that is where college football is. And just because, and I thought this was a good point that he made, just because your team doesn't sign the best recruiting class that you want or didn't get all the guys doesn't mean they're not going to end up with a good group of guys coming in because of where the transfer portal stands.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that Auburn is going to selectively add specific positions via the transfer portal. And you know what? Vibes for me are starting to rise about this 2023 season.
Yeah,
I think that
there's a lot to look forward to.
Things might pan out in Hugh Freeze's first season on the Plains.
Well, so far in 3 weeks, I think he's done a pretty good job. I don't know how much more he could have done. Again, top 20, it's not going to be good enough long term for Auburn, but top 20 in 3 weeks is pretty darn impressive. I'm going to be honest with you.
He wants to make a statement. He can go on the road and beat A&M in week 4.
There you go. And you said Ole Miss is going to start 2-4 next year.
Ole Miss is going to be bad next year.
Well, their recruiting class shows
Ole Miss was a 6-6 team that masqueraded as an 8-4 team this year. They just fooled you all because their schedule was a joke.
That's very fair. That is very fair. Hey, we've got one more day before we're off all of next week. Jack Cutton will join us in studio tomorrow. We'll talk some more Auburn athletics. We'll talk bowl games and college football playoff. And we will wrap up the week and wrap up 2022. Stay safe. Come back tomorrow. I'll talk to you later.